Good morning, brothers and sisters. I'm to cover Deuteronomy 32, the Song of Moses. And someone asked me, does that mean you're going to sing this morning? I said, definitely not. But the Song of Moses is introduced in verse 30 of chapter 31. He moved over into my territory, so I'm going to move over into his. Kelly, I'm speaking of. And this verse should probably go with chapter 32. Verse 30 tells us that this song was for the whole congregation of Israel. Moses must have shouted it out to as many as could hear it. And then Joshua assisted him by relaying it to the rest of the congregation, so that all of the congregation of Israel were able to hear it. A song is a convenient method of impressing truth upon the mind because it makes it easier to remember. There are three what are called songs of Moses in the Bible. Two of those songs are in chapter 15. However, it's chapter 15 of Exodus and chapter 15 of Revelation. And these two chapters are quite related. Moses taught a song of victory and praise in Exodus 15 when Israel crossed over the Red Sea and Pharaoh and his army was destroyed. Revelation 15 is the song of Moses and the Lamb and is another victory song to be sung in the future when the beast system of false religion is destroyed. The song in Deuteronomy 32 is quite different. Moses is at the end of his life, and he uses the song as a witness to be pressed against the people. A short outline of the chapter is as follows. Verses 1 through 6, Moses represents Yahweh to the people as their great benefactor, whom they were to serve and obey. Verses 7 through 14, Moses gives particular instances of Yahweh's kindness to them and concern for them. Verses 15 to 18 is a description of the apostasy of Israel, which would shortly come to pass, and for which they already had an inclination. Verses 19 to 25 are the results of divine justice because of Israel's treachery, folly, and ingratitude. Verses 26 to 38, Yahweh's undeserved mercy and jealousy for his honor, and he will not make a full end of them. Verses 39 to 43, a declaration of Yahweh's memorial name as given to Moses at the burning bush in Exodus 3:14, declaring his sole supremacy and irresistible power. And verses 44 to 47 are a presentation of the song. And verses 48 to 52, Yahweh, by his angel, gives Moses a special revelation of where, when, and why he will die. And it's quite an amazing thing for a man to be able to write all the details of his death before he dies. But Moses was able to do this because of the revelation given to him as to how he would die and how he would be hid in Mount Nebo. But in that process, he also showed him the promised land, which he would be able to partake of in the far future. I would like to highlight some of the key verses. Verse 2 says, "My doctrine shall drop as the rain." Rain is symbolic of the word, and as rain is necessary for life, physical and plant, So also is the word our spiritual life. Verse 3, and this is my main point. I'm going to settle here for a while. I will publish the name of Yahweh. And when I looked into this, I was kind of surprised at the meaning. To publish in Hebrew means to proclaim publicly, even to the point of accosting. That's some strong words. Publish even to the point of accosting. I'm not telling you to go out and accost people, but I think he uses strong language to make his point that it's very important to publish his name. In Tennessee, we've had lectures, and we publish it as well as we can, in a sense. We put it on bulletin boards. We put a sign out. We put it in the newspaper. And we do a lot to try to publish it. And you might find this surprising, but Joe Q Public is not that excited about coming to a Sunday lecture. So, because of that, we have come to the idea that we're going to try something different. And I think Glendon's the one that said this quite a while back. We need to get more creative. So, what we've come up with is that we're going to have a breakfast, pancake breakfast, and we're going to put it on the radio this time, and it's going to be a free breakfast. And not that we just want to feed people, but we want to have an opportunity to meet them, hopefully talk to them, and give them literature. And we're going to give it a try. When I was in the service, a young man and single, I was given a weekend pass down in San Antonio, and I went to town, not with the idea of getting coffee and cookies, but I had something else in mind. I won't go there. But anyhow, as I was walking down the street, I saw this sign out on the street that said, free home-baked cookies and coffee. And so I said, hey, that sounds good. I walked in, and it was a Christian servicemen center where they witnessed to servicemen. And I became involved in that and joined them in their witnessing on the weekends. But they did have good results in bringing people in. That's my point. And we do need to be creative and come up with some ideas. Luke 14:23 reminds me of this verse of going out and proclaiming the word even to accosting, because it says, Jesus said to go out and compel them to come in. That means to convince them of the necessity to come. In John 18:37, and one day this verse just hit me, and I thought, wow, that says so much. John 18:37, Jesus says again, to this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should be a witness unto the truth. In essence, he was saying, my whole purpose for coming into this world was to be a witness for the truth. And brothers and sisters, as followers of Christ, should this not be our purpose in life? To be a witness for the truth? Jesus also said that we are to be the salt of the earth. And if the salt has lost its savor, it's not good for anything except to be cast out. That word savor means saltiness or taste. And certainly we should be flavoring society and our brothers and sisters with the truth. And if you want to know more about salt, this is just a side note, check with Brother Burrell. He'll give you a whole exhortation on it. I heard him talking about it one night, and he went on for quite a while. In verse 5, Moses tells the people they have corrupted themselves. And in verse 6, he says, "Do you thus requite Yahweh?" I like the NIV on this. It says, "Is this the way you repay me? After all that I've done for you, and then you turn your back on me?" And then in verse 7, he says, "Remember the days of old." How valuable to review the past and to recognize the hand of God in your past life. Verse 9, "For Yahweh's portion is his people." Initially, it was a nation of Israel, but in the future, all that are judged worthy. And in verse 10, he refers to them, Israel, as the apple of his eye. And what an endearing term for the nation of Israel. And then verse 11 is a beautiful picture of God's dealings with Israel, as he compares them to a mother eagle stirring up her nest and coming to their rescue if needful. And of course, this is a story of Israel. God stirred them up on several occasions with great leaders, men of renown, and these leaders stirred up the people to follow the way of Yahweh, and when needful, came to their rescue in miraculous ways. We can mention a few men like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Joseph, Moses, Daniel, David, and of course, there's many others. But if you recount their lives, that was their story. God put them in really tough positions, but he also came to their rescue. However, Israel denigrated from obeying and following Yahweh to the point he had to, quote, unquote, hide his face from them. Brothers and sisters, Yahweh forbid that this should ever happen to any of us because of the cares of this life and not putting Yahweh first in our life. Verse 13, he made him to ride on the high places of the earth. Figuratively describes the conquests of the land that they were to, as they went in and conquered the land. Verse 15, but Jeshurun waxed fat. Now, Jeshurun is a good word. It means that they were righteous. But there's a problem. They waxed fat. That is, their successes led them to pride and indifference. And then the next step, verse 16 says, they provoked him to jealousy with strange gods. Yahweh had bound himself to them by a marriage bond, Isaiah 54:6. Thus his jealousy. Verse 20, I will hide my face from them. Yahweh refused to come to their rescue anymore, as some of their enemies would come overcome them. And verse 22, for fire is kindled in mine anger and shall consume the earth. The earth here refers to Israel being done away with as a nation, although not permanent. Verse 26, I said I would scatter them. And how prophetic is that verse? And of course, it's prophesied several other places that that's what would be the result, the final result. He would destroy them as a nation and scatter them to the other nations. And they've been scattered like no other nation. And I would say, how powerful is Yahweh's word? Verse 36, for Yahweh shall judge his people. A confirmation that judgment will be for those responsible ones or those called his people. Verse 39, I kill and I make alive. I wound and I heal. Neither is there any that can deliver out of my hand. Yahweh's statement of his ultimate control over all. And then verse 43, what a wonderful ending to the song, actually, not to the chapter, but to the song. But this is where I'll end it. Rejoice, O ye nations, with his people. For he will avenge the blood of his servants and will render vengeance to his adversaries. And will be merciful to his land and to his people. Both land and people will be viewed with favor by Yahweh in the day of vengeance and glory. Thus, the song concludes with a summons to all nations to rejoice in Yahweh's righteous intervention. The saving of Israel is a cause for universal rejoicing, and I look forward to your comments.